Thank you for joining me for the webcast today. This is Pastor John, your internet pastor in the Lucy Coleman studio. And it is February the, I've been dealing with it all day and I keep the 24th, isn't it? I think it's the 24th, let's see. Yes, February the 24th, a Monday here in Los Angeles. And I'm glad that I could spend some time with you. You know, it always happens. I got to tell you guys the secret of it. I'm going to talk about the secret of love, what makes love work. You guys want to know what makes love work? You have to be into it. The way that I was raised, the way that I was raised in my generation, we were not taught to be into it. And I didn't say into it. I said intuitness. I think another good word would be spontaneity. That you're not going to be the best lover of human beings unless you do it with intuitiveness and spontaneity. And it'd be good for you to look those words up. I'm not going to do it for you. Because if you do it in any other way, you're going to be working in probably somebody else's time zone on somebody else's time, basically. And you would be wasting the time of the person who love's endeavor should be satisfying. I had an interesting time today at the college. I was telling some folk when I got home, I said, oh my gosh, I had a great day teaching. Just a great day. It started off in my first class. If my logic students are listening to me, you people started my day off. You made my day. Yes, you did. But I want to give a shout out to Todd. Because Todd gave me some of these patches for pain things, and I put the ice pack on my back and took a hot shower first and then put the ice pack on it and then put that patch on there. I slept good and I kept the patch on. It's still on me now, but it's worn off. But my arm didn't hurt me until about 1 o'clock or 1:15 at the college today. It didn't hurt at all. Thank you to Todd Garraway, who gave me some medical patches there. And he said, maybe this will help you, Pastor. And I really appreciate Todd. If you really want to go get your hair cut and have it cut up right, you know, and I usually don't do this. I should put an advertisement on my website and send everybody in L.A. there to Percy Saunders Barbershop over there, the Edge Up, located in the Fox Hill Mall. And I think he has another one in another mall somewhere. And that's my barber, Todd Garraway. And he gave me some of these patches, and I'm going to use them every day, every night, because it eases the pain. And check it out. It's not like taking those dopey pills, 600 milligrams of all ibuprofen and all that kind of stuff. Don't have to do that. But anyhow, I had a great time teaching class number one, which is logic. And then let me take care of a little business. I'm telling you, so much better when you're that way. I just had a confrontation with one of my play sons, you know, and we just get along better. I get along better because I don't view things than the way I used to view things or the way that I was taught to view things. Let me share something with you. The second class that I taught today was Philosophy 1. I taught Philosophy 6, which is logic, and then I taught Philosophy 1. It's a God bless semester because I get an opportunity to talk about two really different subject matters, but they're very close together. And as I teach these subjects, I'm talking with young men in the classroom, and my philosophy of world religions off the chain, a little slower than the other classes, but a good class. But I just want to share with you something today before I forget it, because it's important. You know, I was talking to the Philosophy 1 class about three different types of belief systems. Yeah, the Judeo-Christian belief system. Yeah, the Darwinian system. You know, we were talking about human nature, what a man is. And I was talking about how these systems that you grow up under kind of like formulates the pattern from which you live. And I had become keenly aware while in the classroom today, while speaking to the students and asking questions that years ago, if those questions were asked, it would have prompted the greatest response from myself and other people in the classroom if the teacher asked me. I ask the same kind of questions in a college classroom today, and it stimulates no reaction at all on a serious level. The students kind of, let me see if I can put it in a language that you can understand, because I view them as my congregants, just like when I was, you know, teaching the church. I love these young people. I love them, man. And shame on you adults, you olders, that can't love them. Because I'm telling you, they're at the most precious age of their lives right now. And they're very easy to love because they... Oh, I just got to tell you. I had made an appointment with a student. He wanted to interview me as a project for one of his classes, one of his political science classes. And I had forgotten completely. And so after the first class, I left the campus and I went to get a sandwich and some fries and to listen to my jazz in the car. That's what I do. Well, when I got back to the classroom to teach a class, a student was there, and he said, "Mr. Coleman, we were supposed to meet." And I said, "Oh, my God, you know me. I'm getting old." So I forgot it. So I forgot the meeting. So I said, "Well, let's do it today." And he said, "Good." He had time right after the class. And so I said, "I'll let you interview me." I didn't know what he was about. So I get there. Everybody leaves the classroom. We're sitting there, and he's doing a project for his political science class. His instructor is a veteran of the Vietnam War. And the student, a young black man, 21, knows that I was in during the Vietnam conflict. So I gather I would have been a nice person to interview. And that's why he interviewed me. And raised by his mother. That's all I'll say. Raised by his mother. Very nice young man. All man. 100% male. Just the kind of son any decent man in his right mind would want to have. Going to school. 21. I told him when I was 21, I said, "That's the year that I lost my virginity." And we laughed about that. And it was interesting because as I was talking with him, I was sharing with him how strange this is, me talking with a person that is the age that I was, just as if I were that age speaking with him. That's why I like talking with young people, because it makes me young again. It really does. When I speak with them, it makes me young. And they look at me, I don't know what they're thinking when they look at me, because I'm 70. And I wonder what they're seeing. So we're having this conversation, and I hope that I have older type pastors listen to me. You know, some of you pastors that need to retire, get out of the pulpit, and not to make room for the young ones, because they aren't trained in theology. They aren't going to do what's left of our civilization too much good. If they get the love of money out of their hearts, they may be on the way to do it, because that's the only real way that you can be a pastor. You can't have love for money and power and being like those TV punks called LA's pastors. No, that's, you don't want to be that. That's, God doesn't honor that. Now, you can argue with me all you want to. Tell me I'm old-fashioned. Let's all wait and see when we die. all of us will come very quickly into contact with what God said no to. And I don't believe that God just said no to it, because I came up under the Judeo-Christian type of way to define human nature. I believe that God's going to say no because it's just immoral what those guys are doing. They're misrepresenting God. And God is not going to give honor to people that do that. There will be retribution. Retribution to anyone that misrepresents God. And see, don't ever forget that. See, everybody talking about, oh, PJ don't bring too much Bible these. No, you don't need me to bring no Bible, because when I bring it, I'm bringing it just as hard as I bring philosophy or anything else. There will be retribution. Now, let me tell you how that retribution works. You know what God has told you to do, told you to be, told you how to respond, to correspondingly act. You know this. And you're not going to do it. You know what? I feel sorry for you. And I know, because I was teaching them in Philosophy 1 about existentialism. An existentialist creates his own reality. I know all these children that are in college now were raised with this create my own reality. I believe I can fly. You can, you know, I told them I went to a church and they sung that song in the church and I got up and walked out. I said the choir was a lie. The pastor allowed it to be sung. He's a lie. These people are talking about they believe they could fly. You can't fly. You never will fly. You know what I told him in the classroom today? I said, you're going to struggle to make the money you make. If you get rich, especially being one of these singers or one of these actors and stuff, whose couch are you laying down on in Hollywood, and what are you doing? Because that is going on. Don't think that nobody's going to just pick you because you got a pretty face. No. They're going to lay you down and unlace something. I know Hollywood. As I told the students, I live here. Facing reality should not be a difficult thing for a Christian. A Christian should know the world that he lives in. So I'm talking with these students today, and we're going through existentialism, Judeo-Christian, Jardinian, and the feminist idea of philosophizing, you know, why we don't listen to the women. And the women in the Philosophy 1 class were very verbal, talking about women had to be stronger to raise a family because the men had failed. And the women pointed out in the Philosophy 1 class that most men in their society and in their infrastructure are feminized, and they wouldn't have a man. They just pointed it out. It's plain as day. It threw me for a loop. It threw me back. I said, oh, my God, I guess this is... See, that's why I believe, those of you that still listen to me, that's why I believe that the Christian era is done. Because it's going to take more than one-on-one evangelism or a church giving a revival for a weekend. People, it's going to take much more than that. This thing has deteriorated to the degree that there has to be a concerted effort on more than just one group, but the whole section of Christendom, not to have a prayer meeting, not to join hands and pray that the swine heathen would come to the reality. No. Every Christian that knows God needs to go to God in prayer every day and say, use me, O Lord, in your service. Use me. See, we need to stop being used by the church denomination and the John MacArthurs of this world. Stop being used by those people. Save the money. Look at your neighbors. Look at the people you correspond with every day. Not the people that come and sit next to you in the church that dress up, because you don't know about how they're living. They're only showing you what they want to show you. That's another thing this retired pastor discovered. People only show you what they want to show you. There's a woman named Flo Zell in the church that I went to. And then there was another one named Queen Esther. Flo Zell and Queen Esther. They were at odds with each other. And the third one was Adele. And if anybody went to the church that I attended and knew those three women, and that's just three of the many And when I went there, my wife and I would have these discussions. When I get home, she would say, "What's wrong with these women?" I know what she was saying. She was saying, "What's wrong with these black women? The hatred, the hypocrisy, and all of that." And my wife would look at me and say, "And this is what Christianity is?" I'm not saying that Lucy was perfect. I'm not. See, I married Lucy and I loved her. And I told her that I would never engage her into something that would not be decent. But she had to ask, "What the Hades is wrong with these women in the church?" So you see, you can spend your whole life in organizations like that and never get anywhere. You would do better by asking God, "What can you do by yourself?" Because it has played its role. And I think that there was a time when the church was strong. I think the strongest it was in the mid-70s. I know what some of you are thinking. Oh, that's the Reagan era. No, I'm not talking about Reagan, because I never went to Reagan's church. But it was strong back in that day. Now it's not strong. It's just, "I know I'm right about it" syndrome. That's what I call it. But anyhow, let me tell you about this. I'm teaching these classes today, and I'm just having a ball. I'm enjoying myself. Still in pain. Because like I said, about the afternoon, the patch started wearing off, and this pain came back like, a heat-seeking missile. And white lays on rice. But I taught. And I thank God in the classroom under my breath. I said, "Thank you, Lord. Thank you. Look at the way these babies," that's what I call them. I said, "Look at the way these babies are looking at me. They have no idea what's going to come out of my mouth next. But I'm going to say it." Unlike the church, they were not hesitant in listening to what I was saying and aptly applying it to a mind that knows that it has to get better. So grateful that God gives me an opportunity to work and to teach philosophy. I have a lot of work to do. I have to put quizzes and things together. I'm telling my boys, I'm saying, "I can't watch TV. Would you watch games, basketball, football?" I am working. Because that's how I make my money. And I'm so happy that I can do that. But I had a great day teaching. I found that one student, and I'm meeting with another student tomorrow who wants to meet with me. And this other student that I was talking to today, he says, "Man, I'd like to just have nobody." I think we're going to call him Conversations on Being a Man. Because he asked me one of the questions at the end, I think I mentioned it. He says, "What does it mean, Mr. Coleman, to be a man?" And I said, "What?" He said, "What does it mean to be a man?" And I found myself sharing with him all of the things that I was taught when I was a young man coming up. Things like be respectful to other people. Don't keep engaging in conversations with women after you've made up your mind about what you're going to do. Learn how to use the language. This is a non-negotiable conversation, because I refused to negotiate 20 minutes ago and you're still talking about it. I'm also sharing with him how to keep his path straight. Don't be laying your seed around in any of these women that have no respect, no love for you like that. Because they will go to the county and take your seed and in some kind of way have that baby and keep you. Oh, yes. Discussions with men, the way men used to have with me when I was a young boy coming up. See, those kind of conversations have been lost. And what we find ourselves doing, I think, as Christians at times, is criticizing these young people. You don't criticize them. They are rich minds. They want to know what reality is. I would beckon you. I think my friend Dean Gocher was talking to me a few months ago, and he said that's a good thing that I've done, that I'm teaching in the college system, because I'm going back in there. Yes, I'm laying some seed before they get out there in the world, where they won't be around any authority but their own. because that's what a pastor's job was in the church. He was laying the seed, and so that they wouldn't do that. But I'm telling you, there is, oh, that's Mario. He wants to go to an open mic tonight. He goes up there and plays his guitar. I ask him why he does that. He says it gives him peace of mind. And he'll get on the bus and he'll get on the train and go all the way to Sunset and go all the way to that place just to do that. Man, just to do that before he leaves the country again. Leaves home and go wherever he goes. You know, it's a wonderful thing when you think about how young people, what they can do, and working on their job, getting up early in the morning, going to work. I mean, don't tell me. I know black men want to find a job. Black men want to get up and do the work. I know how that is. I'm just having a ball. Well, I'm not getting too much done here sharing it with you. You can figure out what my day was like. It was a good day. Talking with that young brother, he asking me these questions, and then afterwards asking me, what does it mean to be a man? And you know, I was trying to avoid the conversations. You know me, I don't want to talk. I have my earplugs in my ear when I'm on the campus. If people call my name, I don't hear them. I'm just walking like the other professors, looking stupefied, walking from one room to the next. But you get my attention. And there was another guy that took philosophy with me, black guy, basketball player. He came up to me, hey, Mr. Coleman, and talking with me and wanted to talk more. But, you know, I had to go in there and teach, so we had to part company. But I know what he wanted to say. Hey, when are we going to hang out? When are we going to? They all want manly conversations. They want conversations with men. Because if they're in their 20s, 21, they don't have fathers. This group don't have fathers. This one lad said that he got a stepfather, he says, but he don't want to talk with me. I said, oh, I see. He's in the mama. He said, yeah, he ain't thinking about me. And I told the kid right there, hey, dude, I love you. I love you, little dude. He knew. He can tell by the way I look at him. That's why he wants to have these manly conversations with me. Now, I want to ask you, Christian, so are you like that? Are you like that? Because if you're not like that, what are you like? What'd you go to church for? What'd you put on that polyester suit? That silk tie, right? What you standing up in front of the deacon's chairs looking important? Do you do that, what I do? Aren't you excited about starting your own Bible study? Taking a chance at it? Give the old man a chance to rest. I'm too busy teaching another congregation. You know, at Sunday, I was in my office here. I was working on the philosophy PowerPoint formats. And I would just listen to the oldies, and I was having such a great time. I got about 4 or 5 hours in. That's why the lectures were so good. When I put time in my lectures, they're good. Just like when I was putting time in my sermons. When I put time in my sermons, they were good. I'll probably never put another sermon together for the rest of my life. Not because, no, I enjoy listening to me, because I know I'm preaching the truth. No doubt about that. But where are the young people that's supposed to be building up the faith? Are we still quoting old white-headed people like MacArthur and Coleman? But John Coleman said this. John Coleman believed this. John Coleman don't believe that. What are you concerned about what John Coleman believes or says? Why don't you get up off your rump and do something yourself? Hey, that's what being a man is. That's what being a man is. I can honestly say that most of the young men that I spend the time that I'm supposed to spend the time with do become men, and very good strong men too. I just have to remain consistent in being hard on them. Sometimes I get a little flubbied out myself, But you got to be hard on them and let them know what your desire is, to make them more of self-sustainers. And you know what? When I think about that, of self-sustainers, because if you're a man, regardless of, and I'm just going to say it plainly, you're not a man because you're straight. This can be for straight and gay men, what a man is. I'm talking about being a man. See, we have this idea that if you're a real man, oh no, I know some gay men that are real men too, and will let you know that they are real men, and will challenge you intellectually and make you wonder where you've been spending the last 50 years of your life. Brilliant men. But that's neither here nor there. Because, see, that sounds like, you know, you're tooting my own whistle, huh? No, no. It ain't like that. It's not like that. If you're going to be respectful, you're going to be respectful to everyone. Everyone out there has something to offer. You may not disagree with where they are in every places, in every place that they find themselves, but I promise you, you will be engaged in a lively conversation. Very much so. Now, what kind of a day did you have? See, because mine was just, packed. Whenever you talk about philosophy, that's what it does. It forces you to look at life from the vantage point of what's real as opposed to what is unreal. Well, thank you. I got work to do here, and I'm bent over, so I gotta, you know, stretch this shoulder blade. Thank you for coming to the website. Thank you for praying for me. Thank you for encouraging me. Thank you for believing that how I'm trying to affect my world is far better than going to a church and letting the pastor tell me to bring all my neighbors and friends in here so he can have more money in his coffer, and that would get me closer to heaven. Don't play with me like that. I love God. I'll always love God. I love the idea of Jesus. I don't know how he looks. I know he don't look like no European. That's out when he was on the planet, because I'm not into that anyhow. I'm into the Jesus that spoke to me in August of 1967. Now, the Jesus that these other people are into, like MacArthur and the rest of them, he said he never heard of Jesus. So, I don't know. See what I mean? I don't know what Jesus they into. All I know is from my a priori experience. He spoke to me. He called me. I remember the day. I remember the words. Tell them everything I told you to tell them. Am I not doing it now in that classroom at that college? Am I not doing it now over this microphone in my studio? Ain't got people around me that are not church people and knows that I'm a good guy and that I'm looking out for their welfare, number one. No doubt about it, no question. Knows it and will tell you that and will fight you to defend the right of them saying that they're telling the truth. What are you doing? I'm serious, evangelical. What are you doing? Aren't you tired of it yet? Showing up once a week, what, for cookie and donuts? Donuts, cookies, and coffee. Oh, hi. What are you doing? That's making a difference. Darn it. That's the kind of message church needs. Pastor, you need to get behind the pulpit in every church this morning. And if they all prayed to God, God would give them all the same message. Why should I let any of you people in heaven? Thanks for coming to the site. It's throbbing, so I'm going to have to stop because it's interfering with my reasoning capacity now. Keep coming to the website for fresh questions and insightful answers. God bless. You know the drill. Whatever you do, stay into the Word.